Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Just to kind of sum things up for corn and soybeans here, obviously a lot of times we kind of look at those two crops together as there's switching that occurs. But overall, you can see the total for those two crops combined, 178.2 million acres. That's still down 1.3% from what was planted to that total last year. You do see a few pound signs. We do still see record high corn and soybean combined in Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, New York, and Wisconsin.
Lance Honig is the crops branch chief of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service.
And here again, you can see that combined acreage and how it compares with the March intention. So you can see where those changes occurred between what farmers intended back in early March.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In terms of acreage, we're now estimating 89.9 million acres planted for corn. That's up 0.5%, or just 431,000 acres from the March intentions. Still down 3.7% from what was planted last season.
Lance Honig is crops branch chief with USDA's National Ag Statistics Service.
Harvested for grain area, we expect to total 81.9 million acres. That's down 4% from what was actually harvested last year. You can see the gray box at the bottom of the page here indicating that of those total acres that were estimated here, 4.03 million of those were still left to be planted.
As highlights from a USDA acreage report released on Thursday for soybeans.
88.3 million acres estimated to be planted. That's down 2.9% from the March intentions, still up 1.3% from what was planted a year earlier. In fact, if you think about the corn number, we're now back to more corn and soybeans. If you remember back to the intentions, we were actually expecting more soybean acres than corn for only the third time ever. It looks like that did not happen in reality at the end of the day. So more corn than soybeans again this year. Harvested area, we're estimating 87.5 million acres, up 1.4% from last year. Just giving you a quick graphical look at those soybean acres over recent seasons. And I would point out, we're still looking at the third highest planted acreage on record for soybeans.
And for the U.S. cotton crop?
Cotton planted area, 12.5 million acres. That's up 2% from the March intentions, 11.3% more than was planted last season. We'll have our first forecast for harvested area for cotton in August in the crop production report. Again, taking a quick look at that over recent seasons, you can see the highest total planted area since 2019.
And to determine where the changes in acreage are for cotton,
and looking at it state by state, you can see increases expecting in all states with the exception of Arizona. Largest increases in Texas. That's actually a 750,000 acre increase in Texas compared to last season. And here again, a quick comparison with the current acreage estimates back to the March intentions. You can see really the big increase being driven by Texas, of course, our largest producing state, 4.4%. Or 300,000 acres more than they intended to plant back in March.
And finally, he focuses on winter wheat.
Of course, this is our third estimate of the season for the planted area, 34 million acres. We're now estimating that's down 0.7%, or just 230,000 acres from what we had previously estimated. It is up 1.1% year over year, 25 million acres now expected to be harvested for grain. That's up 2.1% from what we published in the crop production report earlier this month, still down 1.8% year over year. Taking a quick look at those acres over time, really the interesting thing here, I think, is the harvested to planted ratio or abandonment rate, depending on how you want to look at it. Looking at that harvested to planted ratio, even though it's up a little bit from what we had previously published this season, that is still the lowest H2P since 2002. It's the second lowest since 1951, and in fact, that's the sixth lowest ever, driven largely by dry conditions, particularly in the southern portion of the growing area this year, leading to higher than normal abandonment.
Lance Honig, Crops Branch Chief at USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, with highlights from the Crop Acreage Report. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The big story right now, obviously, in the U.S. is the U.S. corn and soy belt.
Joe Woznicki is a meteorologist with the Commodity Weather Group.
We're up to almost 35 to 40% of the U.S. corn and soy belt that's currently under some dryness stress. Now, we're not quite into corn pollination yet. That's later. About the last 10 days of July is what we're expecting for peak pollination. But right now, this stress definitely taking a toll here. We do see some rains here over the next couple of weeks, scaling things back perhaps to less than 20% of that corn and soy belt. But definitely some needed rains here across the Midwest over the next 2 weeks. We do expect once we do get into that later July period for those areas that we will see some better showers and see the heat back off, mainly to the far northwestern belt. So we don't expect this to be a major drought issue into the summer for the Midwest, into the peak pollination. But again, we do need to see some rains here to kind of foster that confidence as we move forward. Some other areas, the southeast, which pollinates corn a bit earlier in the year, has seen some stress so far with heat and dryness. They are almost finished with pollination down there, about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way done. So that damage has already occurred there. Texas cotton, if we move down there, they did see some showers over the past month, kind of timely showers there to aid the crop, but it does dry out and warm up again over the next 2 weeks for the most part. So we will be watching that area as well as our late July forecast has started to dry out there as well. So it does seem like a building heat and dryness concern there for Texas. Elsewhere, it does look like areas into the northern plains wheat could be a little bit drier as we move forward here, so some stress there. And then if we move all the way up into Canada and North America, they're seeing some pretty good showers for the wheat and canola belt there. So that pretty much wraps up the shorter-term forecast.
And for the rest of the summer?
We do feel like the dryness in the Midwest will scale back. And we do think that once we move later on into July, there is the possibility for some of those West Texas showers. But the next 2 weeks here do seem like the showers will be limited. But then once we move later on into the summer, into August, and even in September, it does look like the South, again, in West Texas will dry out. Everything remains warm. In the Midwest, things look to dry out a little bit and warm up in August. And into September as well, things are warmer. So that's going to limit early frost risks in the Midwest or anything like that that would affect the corn crop. And basically not a whole lot of showers for early harvest concerns either in the Midwest, maybe some spotty portions in the eastern Midwest, but nothing too widespread. If we start to move into fall, we do see some better showers, and those are going to be needed for the central and southern plains wheat areas. So we do expect those to pick up, but if they don't, especially after a couple months of dryness here, their subsoil moisture and topsoil moisture will be pretty low, and they're going to start to need that for wheat establishment after the planting period there into the fall. Now, if we move on into winter, it does look like another La Nina situation setting up. So we're kind of on a third straight winter here, which is pretty rare for La Nina conditions, which again is going to favor that drier outlook across the South, across Texas, with the cooler and wetter pattern mainly staying to the north and northern Midwest up into the Northeast.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
USDA's June Hogs and Pigs Report places the June 1st inventory of all hogs and pigs at 72.5 million head, down just slightly from last quarter and almost 1% lower than a year ago, consistent with pre-report expectations.
Dr. Jason Franken is with Western Illinois University, recapping the quarterly Hogs and Pigs Report.
Likewise, and as expected, market hog and breeding inventories are both down about 1% from a year ago, with market hogs down 0.25% from last quarter and breeding inventories more than 1% higher. Each class of market hog inventories is also down compared to the same time last year, with the lightest weight class down the most at 1.3% lower. Overall, the number of hogs weighing less than 180 pounds is almost 1% smaller than a year ago, which will be the market hogs arriving at processing plants from July through November 2022. The decline in lighter weight hogs partly reflects that the March through May pig crop is also 1% smaller than last year as anticipated, with about 1.4% fewer sows farrowed and about 0.5% more pigs saved per litter. Looking forward, summer and fall farrowing intentions are down about 0.5% and 1.4% respectively from actual farrowings last year. These numbers should similarly imply somewhat smaller slaughter numbers in subsequent periods. Frozen stocks of pork are rebounding but have not yet reached pre-COVID-19 levels. According to the USDA cold storage report, cold stocks of pork at the end of May are up 2% from the previous month and 17% from a year ago. Poultry stocks are also up 2% from the prior month and 1% from a year ago, while beef is down 2% from the prior month but up 25% from last year. Though the numbers are somewhat bearish for pork, there still appears to be plenty of room for growth in cold stocks. The USDA forecasts U.S. per capita pork consumption at 51.1 pounds per person in 2022, rising to 51.7 pounds per person in 2023, matching the highest it's been since prior to COVID-19 when it reached 52.1 pounds in 2019. Hence, strong domestic demand is expected to persist. The U.S. exported 529 million pounds of pork in April, or about 19% less than in April of 2021. Much of the drop reflects continuously lower shipments to China and Hong Kong year over year since December 2020, with China's rebound from African swine fever. With lower exports to China, exports to Mexico, which were 20% higher, comprised 35% of U.S. pork exports in April. The USDA estimates U.S. pork exports in the second quarter of 2022 to be 1.6 billion pounds, or 15% lower than last year, and forecast the last two quarters of 2022 to be 3.5% and 12.5% higher, respectively, placing the total for 2022 6% below last year. The first quarter of 2023 is forecast to be about 1.5 billion pounds, or around the same as what it was in the first quarter of 2022. Taking all this into account, hog prices are forecast for the next four quarters. The forecast presented here is for the national weighted average net price on a carcass basis for all transactions for producer sold barrows and gilts, including negotiated and contract prices. This net price should be more reflective of what producers receive on average and normally runs at a premium of more than $2 a hundredweight over the base price. Although contract prices often exceed cash prices, from this last March through May, this net price averaged $100.34 a hundredweight, or about $5.33 a hundredweight lower than the corresponding price for negotiated or spot transactions.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, the reports came out. I thought it was pretty bullish for the beans. Came out at 88.3 million acres. It was down 2.65 million acres from last month. That's a big cut.
Mark Gold is a market trader with Top Third Ag.
We originally rallied about 50, 55 cents off the lows. We broke as the corn broke, got down lower on the day, and rallied about 30 cents, and then broke again. We didn't quite finish on our lows, but still pretty weak close in the beans. The corn and wheat under heavy selling pressure here today as funds add to short positions. The wheat acres were a little bit higher than what they were expecting. Stocks numbers I thought were fairly friendly, 660 on the wheat. That's down 185 from a million from a year ago. So I thought that was a little bit friendly. It was 5 million more than what they were looking for, but still a low number. The beans and corn were higher. Corn was 235 million higher. Beans were 202 million higher than they were a year ago. So that certainly didn't help things out here.
Then, in spite of good news for wheat, the market shook it off.
Egypt bought that wheat from Romania, France, Bulgaria, and Russia, 815,000 metric tons. Big piece of business, but the U.S. got nothing out of it. It was the biggest purchase Egypt has made in 13 years. And again, we didn't get 5 cents worth of the business. The wheat closed under the 200-day moving average here for the first time, you know, since the 200 days came on. So, you know, this is a pretty bearish signal. But, you know, they always say buy heavy deliveries on first notice day. We saw some pretty good deliveries today. They also say buy the first Monday of the month. In this case, it'll be the first Tuesday of the month. So I think we may be getting near a low in the wheat. We're pretty oversold here. Relative strength is down to 20. It was down to 19.5 on the last break. So, you know, we're getting pretty low here and due for some kind of rally. The funds are short, so I don't know how much more we've got in the wheat.
And corn?
The corn, on the other hand, we held the 200-day moving average. It came in at 614. We got down to 618 and three quarters. Closed at 619 and three quarters. So we missed it by about 5 cents here, 6 cents. You know, again, we could close under it tomorrow, maybe even open lower Tuesday morning if we've got good weather out here. But I think the pros, people are going to want to buy some corn down there. So I'm hoping that $6 holds it here.
Agriculture is not the only ones taking a beating.
You know, just a tough day all the way around. The crude oil down $4.02 a barrel. It rallied $4.50 off its lows today. Got up to 109.61 and then broke to 105.76. That was 65 cents off the lows. Saudi Arabia came out and said that they're going to increase oil production ahead of Biden's arrival there. So that put the pressure on the crude oil. Dow Jones down 295. Just nothing very friendly out here. So the big question is, what are the funds going to do now with the corn and the beans? The beans, I don't think it was as big a problem as the corn is, but they're long 191 corn after today. You know, certainly not only should they be short here, but they should be out. Now, are they going to blow out of 191 contracts between now and next week? I doubt it. I don't really see that happening. But they could certainly liquidate more positions out here. I can't imagine how much money the funds have lost in these markets in the last several months.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
That's an even-numbered year, which means that Congress is going to be spending a fair bit of time back in their district come August, September, and October. So the time for legislating is rather limited, at least between now and November.
Mike Stranz is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union.
So a lot of things are going on in Capitol Hill, as there's been, well, we'll talk more about cattle price transparency and fairness for farmers type priorities. But outside of that, Congress certainly has a full agenda to get through appropriations bills, which are moving along both in the House, well, primarily in the House at this point, and looking at how some of the Senate changes might come into play. Those, of course, are due by September 30th. We'll see what sort of order shakes out on if those spending bills get approved by September 30th. Short answer is that they won't be fully reauthorized by then. There'll probably be an extension or something. But nonetheless, work goes on there. And then, of course, just a block away from the Capitol, there's been a lot of Supreme Court decisions, of course, on gun laws, on abortion, on a number of other issues. Just earlier today, there were some EPA-related rulings. Those decisions have roiled the political landscape quite a bit here. And, you know, it's one of those underlying issues, just the changes for the judiciary branch going on that are making and distracting, I guess, Congress from a lot of the other work that's going on. So, like you said, there's a lot that's changed since the last time we talked. And I think that Congress was busy already. And now with these changes, they're even busier with not a lot of time to get stuff done.
Cody Besant is CEO of Plains Cotton Growers.
All groups spend time with either the ranking member or the chairman trying to build rapport going into a farm bill discussion. And certainly that's one thing we try to capitalize on. You know, by example, the ranking member G.T. Thompson has spent a vast amount of time in Texas the last couple of years really trying to learn and harness the different ag products and ag interests that we have in the state. He's been to Lubbock, Texas. He's been to the Corpus Christi area. He's been throughout the Rolling Plains and certainly traveled and become more averse throughout the U.S. on different ag interests that are outside of the state of Pennsylvania. He knows cotton. He's become more astute in cotton. He knows catfish farming down in the lower Rio Grande Valley area or South Texas area because he has been committed and spent time there to learn more about it. And that's very admirable of him as becoming, being the ranking member now, you know, potentially intermittently could be chairman, or vice versa with David Scott being the current chairman. He's certainly spent a lot of time traveling around trying to learn more about issues that he is unfamiliar with. And it's a whole different interest whenever you become chairman of a committee and someone outside of your district that has to represent all facets of agriculture versus what your initial district has to offer. And I certainly applaud them for doing that. But it's a lot of time spent by organizations such as ourselves, but also time away from production ag, from farms, for some of our leadership, but also others in general that get to spend time with the ranking member or chairman or other members in Congress, trying to better educate them of the overall value of ag across the board in the U.S. And we're very proud to be able to be an advocate to do that. And certainly they have been very receptive to learn more about the industry and how we can enhance and improve the farm policy we have today and moving into the discussions for the next farm bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, there was a lot of internal dialogue and conversation about making this happen, and a lot of real hard work by a lot of our team behind the scenes. But we're really happy with the outcome.
Zach Ducheneau, Administrator, USDA's Farm Service Agency, on streamlining the process of ERP.
So far, I think we've got around 120,000 producers served. And as you mentioned, the Secretary announced we're just over $4 billion of the $6 billion we expect to pay through this phase of the program. And that pre-filled application has been very well received by producers all across the country. We get to travel the countryside and hear that feedback, and they say this, much like ELRP, has been a welcome breath of fresh air, if you will, in the administration of disaster programs.
There's the ERP program and then ELRP.
ELRP is, we think we've got most of the folks that are going to be eligible for ELRP phase one in the door. However, there are some folks that may, for whatever reason, not have filed a livestock forage disaster program application, even though they were eligible last year. And we want those folks to know that because we built this ELRP on top of that data, we will accept late filed applications so that they could receive that LFP payment from 2021 as well as the ELRP payment. So we're advising our producers, go into the county office, let them know you'd like to file a late filed LFP application. That county office will batch those up, and we'll get those up to the Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs and try to get those applications approved so we can get the producers the assistance they need.
And he admits FSA is working to wrap up phase one.
Well, we've got a little bit of work to do, Tony, to wrap up phase one of ERP. Those producers that had crop insurance and RMA data on file are those that we were able to serve first. The next batch is going to be those that had NAP coverage, and also those producers that maybe had a supplemental coverage option, enhanced coverage option, stacked income protection plan, margin protection plan, or area risk protection insurance. They weren't there just because of the timing of their policies and their paperwork submission. RMA didn't have that information yet. So that will also go out in this, I guess, ERP phase 1.1, where we're getting NAP and these other folks taken care of. The NAP information we do have on file, and we think we're going to be able to get that out the door, get those forms sent out sometime in July.
But really, none of this would work without county committees.
You know, the county committees are really unique all the way across the federal government. I don't know that there's another option where a citizen has the opportunity to so meaningfully participate in the delivery and administration of policy decisions at the local level. County committee members are selected by their fellow producers in their county based on the local administrative area in which they operate or reside, and they'll serve as our eyes and ears on the ground, if you will, as we go about delivering not only disaster programs, ad hoc programs, but our regular standing programs as well.
Administrator of the Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
For the second week in a row,
we have seen a rather sharp increase in topsoil moisture rated very short to short nationally.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says as we started this week, a big chunk of the nation's topsoils, 43%, rated as either short or very short of moisture.
That is an 18 percentage point jump from just 2 weeks ago when we were sitting at 25%.
And just in the last week, there have been what Rippey calls
rather incredible increases in topsoil moisture rated very short to short in several lower Midwestern states.
On the list of states with over 30% of topsoil moisture rated short to very short, Ohio, Indiana. Let's put Kentucky on there, where 74% of topsoils there are in the short to very short moisture category. Last week it was only 34%. And Rippey says soils are drying out all through the South and Mid-Atlantic, and so
we're probably likely to still see that very short to short number creeping up as we head into July.
This is Gary Crawford, Washington.